4 NUE Mobile. Morning, Chad, KA3JCA.
Man, you did an outstanding job with the net last night. I mean, I know you used to do it in the past, but man, you rolled with it. Man, you did a really nice job.
Sure, I appreciate that. I was a little nervous. I practiced for a couple of days beforehand, and I stumbled through a little bit of the software last night, but I got it caught up real quick, and Ashley was sitting here last night helping, so I'm going to sit here and train her and Sally on that software now.
Okay, well, a couple of tips and tricks here. When you call the net and you... let me ask you a question first. How long have you been listening?
Been listening here since last 6 months or so. It's been like 2 years that I wasn't on the radio.
So when you, for example, what I'm getting at here is that when you hear KO4NUE and KO4RYP, then you don't, those two, you don't need to look up. You know they're valid. You know who they are, things like that. So that was my first mistake or lesson learned, was if I recognize the call and I already know, you know, who it is, I don't look it up. And I, you know, but when you're starting off and all, I get it.
Appreciate that. I know that, like some of the calls, like some of the guys, like Shane and you and Dave and Gary, DIOS, like I knew those and I could just type it in real quick and just hit F5. But I also started with a clean, like, database where we purged everything out of my database, so nothing populated at first. But now, like, I have a clean slate from last night's check-in, and... Today I'm going to go back and like edit with the nicknames and stuff like that that I've heard over the tapes and so forth like that. But no, trust me, any help is appreciative.
Here's another lesson I've learned. Just me now. My mind works a little funny. Like the spiral up top, because I can use, when I call the net, I can go completely through the book. When I'm at the end of the book, it's over.
Something about a tablet and the spiral at the top, I know what you're talking about. You were broken up in and out, and they got it from Wally World. Can you hit the 285 machine from where you're at?
You want me to move to what frequency? You need me to move to what frequency?
Can you hit the 147.285 machine? Yes, sir.
For NUE QSY to White Oak.
Okay, 3JCA QSY.
Where did you see?
Man, out of the candle. We got someone out there?
N4DJC.
Hello! N4DJC, that's you, Jerry?
I've been up a while this morning. I'm usually not up quite so early, but I got up about 7 this morning. Hope you're doing well today.
Nice start to the day. Beautiful weather. Well, I can't complain at all. I'm waiting for my wife to go out and take her walk. She goes out for about 25 minutes. I play rock and roll music. crank it up. But in, anyway, I'm not sure what I'm doing today, Jerry, so I haven't made my mind up. You know the retirement life.
That, like I hear a lot of times, and you just take it in heed. If you don't plan your day, somebody else will plan it for you.
And I've got, really, I've got a bummer. I have two email accounts. One of them I can't get into. Something's happened with the password. And to get in requires a smartphone. I use a flip phone. I don't text. I'm very out of date. I'll probably get one soon, though. My wife has one. But my number that I logged with the email account is not a text phone. And that blows everything. You have to make phone calls and get someone with a smartphone to send pictures of your license and all kinds of stuff. I got to do that today. Yeah, somebody else made work for me. Over.
And my son still uses a flip phone, but it does have text messaging, but his is a 3G phone, so yeah, they're going out. You're not gonna be able to use those after December 31st of this year. So he'll have to upgrade to a smartphone. But we did quite a few years ago. My wife finally got hers about 3 or 4 years ago. And as long as you know what you're doing with them, they're very useful. But you really have to be cautious with text messaging and emails and that sort of thing. And have enough wherewithal to not click on links that people send you and that sort of thing. It's kind of a learning process, as it is for all of us over the years. But it's been a good addition to the. To the electronic stable for us anyway.
Yeah, I can see a couple of uses for it. I don't like the small screen, so I have to use my 3x glasses practically. And I have good sight outside, about 2 feet out. The small print is getting fuzzy these days. So the real small stuff, like they put on aspirin bottles or something. And you're like, what's that say? So I need like 2.5x, actually, glasses, the readers. I just get them when I need it. And, I'll tell you, a lot of fine print out there. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, a smartphone is on the horizon, no doubt. And my wife actually says, well, you won't use it. I only use my flip phone hardly at all. Very rare. So I have a house phone. But boy, has that got limited usage. So, you know what? I'll leave it at this and send it back to you, Jerry. There was a time when we didn't have phones, as you remember. How did we survive? Oh, my goodness. But I still live in that era, so I've got to break out. Because they expect everyone texts. So what boggles my mind is the technology as it's coming out is expecting every single person over 18 to have a phone. And really, over 10. And now I think even kids in kindergarten have more.
My granddaughter's 12. She has one, but it's more for safety reasons than anything else. It is handy for those, you know, for some things. You have to be able to monitor what they're doing. And, you know, the iPhones are pretty easy to block a lot of stuff from those, so they can't, you know, access certain websites, that sort of thing. But it's one of those things like new roads. You know, you build a new road and nobody uses it, and you turn around a few years later and you're just packed with cars. It's one of those things, you know, you don't think you're going to need it, but you eventually will, and it'll be, you know, they'll expect you to have something like that That's the way our doctors contact us for appointments and bill payments and that sort of thing. They can be handy, I mean, if you use them right. And they can suck up a lot of attention, too, if you get riveted to them, which I don't. But I do have to use them a bit. When I traveled in sales, I got to the point where we started out with cell phones fairly early because I traveled throughout the Southeast and I was gone most of the time. That's really the only, couldn't stop at the phone booth every time to contact somebody. And even in the early days, back in the early 90s, I had a cell phone in my car then. And finally wound up getting a flip phone back in the about mid-90s, I guess. But it was a good thing for me when I started traveling because it made it easier for me to keep in touch. And of course, we didn't have text messaging then. That's something that came along. Actually, text messaging came along after I basically retired, I guess, John.
I didn't want to go to the next level technologically. I was retired. Yeah, it started, the attitude started around retirement at 62. I go, what? I don't need this, or what? I don't need that. I never had one before, and life went on. So, in the last 2 years, I've sort of been in the mood where I don't want to have my brain changed for some new technology. That's my problem. You know, like you were talking about, get with the program. So, it won't be hard. I worked in, I didn't work in IT, but I was an electrical engineer and I did a lot of work with software, but that's why I know what I do and don't want to do in retirement. Over.
I did when I was in sales. I was in manufacturing for almost 25 years before I moved to sales. The last 15 years or so of my working career, as a manufacturer, I used to kid people. As a manufacturer, somebody called me, there was a problem. And when I was in sales, somebody called, it was money. So I had a good experience the last 15. First 25 or so wasn't so good on the phone, but. Because I was managing a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week operation. I had about 350 people working for me at that time, and there was something going on all the time. But I got pretty immersed in technology about the same time I got interested in ham radio back in the late 70s. And it kind of went concurrent with me. Yeah, I'm not necessarily a technology junkie because some of the stuff that I have now is beyond me or beyond the level I want to, I don't want to spend that much time to learn some of the stuff, but it does keep your mind fresh and working some of the modes and digital modes and that sort of thing it can be helpful and it's interesting, but it's just one of those things now that like cell phones and text messaging and that sort of thing, it's almost a requirement to keep in contact, especially with doctors. And, they send me prescriptions via text messaging and I got notifications. And it helps me organize my week or day or month. But, I try not to spend too much time on it. But it can be addictive once you get immersed in it.
On the text, I guess. People I'd text, I would just call them on the house phone, and if they can't answer, well, no one sentence could explain what I want to talk to them about, one, two or three sentences, on a text. So, that seems more useful, actually, if you just want to keep in constant contact. I usually don't need to do that, or want to. Be in constant contact. I like my breaks. And I sit back and do a little thinking. in my day's time, a little less talking. But I enjoy a good conversation. Get into that. God, I'll tell you, Jerry, we get gatherings here, and be the ladies and the guys, and they sort of separate as the evening goes on, get these gatherings. And I'm listening with the girls. They have three conversations going at the same time, crossing over each other. How do you do that? I like to focus on one conversation. But they have three or four going in an eight-foot circle. It's amazing.
Seth is in the genes from, you know, 100,000 years ago, because you're right, that's pretty common. It's hard for me to keep track of one conversation sometimes, but I know exactly what you mean, John. Sometimes it's confusing if you get involved in it. I just stay out of that sort of thing. I learned my lesson after being married for 50 years.
We do pick up a few things along the way. I agree with that. So, yeah, I back out sometimes. And then the guys are talking mostly sports in this particular group. And I have nothing against it. I like the focus that sports requires to play at a professional level. I like to see good moves. But I don't know one team from another. You know, I watch actually more baseball than football. But I don't make it a regular thing, so I wasn't a sports nut. But that's what goes on in the conversations, too. So every once in a while, I run into somebody who actually goes down my vein. But Jerry, come on. Ham radio, I've been doing it since 67, so it's a part of my life. But a lot of people don't even know it really exists. So it's very esoteric in some ways. And you bring it up at a party, I'm a ham radio operator, amateur radio. And they go, OCV? No, not quite. Well, over.
I got started out in shortwave listening back in 76, I guess. And I had one of the Yaesu FRG7 shortwave receivers. And I got interested in it then, and I really didn't make any. I was working night shifts and that sort of thing back in the early days, and I really didn't make any inroads until I started working for a company up in near Charlotte. And one of the guys I worked with was a ham radio operator, and he's really only the second one I actually knew. And he kind of led me into it, you know, since I was a shortwave listener. And he had a couple of swans. He had an HF rig and a 6 meter rig. He was a technician. He'd been a technician for years. He'd had one of the WN calls, you know, back when you had the novice calls. I was a novice too, but he had a WN 4 call. He'd been a technician. He upgraded technician, but he just couldn't grasp that 13 word per minute code. And I didn't have any trouble with it. I breezed right on through it, and I helped him. You know, he helped me get started out in it because he knew all the technical stuff, and I did. And I helped him, you know, finally pass his 13-word per minute code, and he got his journal. But he passed away some years ago. But he'd been a ham, you know, a long time. He had a nice tower. He had a 6 meter beam, and had a. He was running wire antennas on his. He was most of 80 meters. He was running wire antennas down from his tower, I think. I don't remember him having any, you know, like a tri-band or anything like that. But he was a really nice guy. Took a lot of time out with me. That's really what got me started. But you're right, though. It's a real, real small group of people. It's a niche hobby, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Think that they know a little bit about it, but most people don't, that I run into in these group gatherings, you know, so it's hard to talk about it with an unwilling audience. They go, okay, very good, move off to another subject. And billiards is my other passion. I play every day and keep sharp. I used to be in tournaments in the 70s and 80s, back in the 80s. And always kept my stroke, keep the stroke going and keep the game going. But trying to talk about particulars in billiards, you're not going to get into that conversation either. Hey, I got to get a glass of water. I'll be right back, Jerry. I'll turn up the volume and I'll go ahead and talk.
Since you bring up billiards, one of the guys on here was talking about it last night. Somebody he'd mentioned they like billiards and when I first started dating my wife back in the late 60s, they had a table in their basement, had a full size slate table, and it had the old mesh pockets on it. It'd been around for years, but they had it leveled and had it recovered, re-bumpered. Pre-cushioned, I guess. It was a good table, but most of the guys in my generation got their start either like a pool hall that had full size table or at a beer joint, which is not a full size table because the cue ball is larger than the different size than the rest of the balls. It takes an entirely different skill set. Of course, when you start playing for money, it's a whole other thing entirely. And yeah, you put a pool table in. Mix in a jukebox and some cold beer, and anything's liable to happen.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't get into the bar scene. So, there are billiard halls, of course, with a bar. But they're billiard halls, and you have 6 or 12 tables or more. Get to playing with other people that are into the game, and I don't mind gambling, but I like to know who I'm gambling with. So I call them customers, and you can get some good customers. They're there to learn, master the sport, and you're a little better than them, and they want to learn from you. So these people also are well-to-do. So you can play them 20 a game, and they can lose 200 to you, and they won't care. You got to know your customer, over.
That was my early days. Of course, I was in college then. It was a little different life than I had later on. I don't think I picked up a stick probably after sometime in the mid-70s or mid to late 70s, I don't guess. But I had to always... We always had our favorites and stuff. A lot of times, back in those days, they didn't have sneaky peeks like they did back in the 90s, where you could play a little like a house key and kind of slip something in there. But there was a lot of money changed hands. Most of the time, it was just for a beer for the game or something like that. But I've seen games, they had no business playing for the kind of money they were playing for. But that's beyond me. I didn't do any more than that. I didn't do anything like that. You can only gamble what you can afford to lose.
Well, yeah, that's the first thing. You got to be able to pay. They call that, if you don't, they call it shooting with an empty barrel. You gamble with someone and you have nothing. And you're counting on winning. And if you lose, you got to run, I guess. But anyway,
like I said, I didn't have one, but it didn't look like a sneaky peek to do now. It was a little more you could see the joint in it, but it didn't have the diamond didn't mess you up or anything like that. It was just a two piece, but I never liked a real heavy key. A lot of people like one, but I liked them lighter. And I always re-tipped them and put my own tips on and that sort of thing. And, like I said, I enjoyed it. I was never very good, but I was good enough to enjoy it, enjoy playing. And, you can spend a lot of money. I mean, I think it's as though I came around the day, I want to say Balabushkas that was a real good name years ago. I don't know who's making keys now.
Yeah, for collectors, Balabushka would be a good purchase. Nowadays, now there are a ton of builders now, Jerry. And if you want a really good cue, I mean, with a beautiful hard surface on the shaft that's smooth as glass, reduced deflection on the shaft of the stick by putting a spine in it, all kinds of cool things, and it adds up. And I pay $400 for a shaft, and my cue costs $1,500, and it doesn't even have inlays. It's just that I got to select the wood that was used for the cue stick when it was still a square blank, and I saw the grain, and it was beautiful. I said, I want this piece of wood made into a cue stick. And the guy, his name is Mike Galassi. He's incredible. And he made my cue. Over.
Yeah, just like every technology improves anything like that, because you got these high-precision lathes and, being able to check the spine and deflection on the spine and that sort of thing. And, of course, picking out the wood is always the thing. It's kind of like, when the guys I know that build bamboo fly rods, they have to spine them correctly. And, they use milling machines for them. They used to hand plane them. They actually have a mill they use now, and they mill them precisely. Now, they can, before, they do it by hand and measure, use micrometers to measure. Now, they can mill them out by with a specialty milling machine, and those things, they might be $7,000-$9,000 or more, depending on who makes it. But it's the same thing. The technology, the craftsmanship is still there, but the technology's got to the point now where the precision is much, much better. Some other materials for shafts now.
Okay, if you were over in England playing snooker, you might get a shaft made of ash. But over here it's Canadian rock maple. Over.
That's what's, they made archery and hard rock maple is what you use for the, before they were laminated, they used laminations and glassed over, and they was used a hard rock maple. And the limbs and the risers are made out of some dense hardwood like rosewood or something like that. But I wonder if they were still using that, because that stuff is, I guess it's got to be, they got to have the moisture levels got to be correct in it. And of course, if you start out with a straight grain, you don't have to worry about it too much as long as you don't let it get too wet or too dry, I suppose.
It's dried for 2 years and shaved every few months, another 20 thousandths or so, 40 thousandths maybe if it's holding its true. And they true the stick to the grain over a period of 2 years. The craft epoxy. It's hard as glass, and it's polished down to an 8,000 grit paper glass. Go ahead.
That's really smooth, and you know, I wonder if they, you know, some of the people are using for, some of the woods people are using now for, like, for knife materials, you know, for handles and scales and knives. They use impregnated woods now. Some of them still use natural woods, like, you know, ebony and rosewood. You know, it's got a high enough oil content, you don't have to worry about it. And of course, ivory. You can't get any ivory anymore. The ones that have ivory on them, you know, people, you know, you have to soak those things in mineral oil to keep that ivory from shrinking. But the cocoa bolos, and some of them, I mean, that whole family, blackwood family, that whole family of woods has got a high oil content. It didn't move around a lot. I'm just curious if they, you know, if they impregnated it or just sealed it up. It sounds like they let it dry. Straighten it, let it dry, and then they finally, after that period of time, they just seal it with a, you know, encapsulate it with epoxy.
Yeah, just the old-fashioned way, natural drying in a controlled environment, and then sealed. And they use all of what you're talking about. See, my custom cues are based on exotic woods and not a bunch of diamond inlays and points and stuff that require milling into the wood and laying the inlay on it. I don't want the wood milled at all except for its basic shape, which is acoustic. I'm not known for fancy inlays or anything. I go for the wood. So, and the rings where the wrap is, where your backhand goes on the butt section of the cue, you know, I have kid glove leather wrap, and the rings on each end are of turquoise. Over.
Contractive, then that's simpler, is always better. Yeah, I was just curious what they were using now. I know the, you know, used to do walnut gun stocks when refinished stocks, either built them. Had a gun's best friend of mine, he was rich from New Jersey and lived over in Harlem. I worked with him off and on, you know, when I was in school. And he showed me some tricks he used. And of course, he passed away by the time I ever did anything, any refinishing stocks or anything. But now, it's not really a secret, but it's not a very well kept secret now. When people refinish stock, sometimes they use a super glue because it penetrates the finish and seals it up, so it doesn't, you know, you don't have to worry about moisture getting to the walnut. You don't have to worry about the linseed or other type of oil finishes or the polyurethane that you can't ever get off. Once you put polyurethane finish off, it bonds the wood. It's a mess getting that thing down to raw wood again. But I always find it interesting, different finishing processes people use on different woods. It's always, it amazes me how, you know, people come up with these things, but they come up with some good ones though. And, you know, pool cues are, that's a whole other ball game there, keeping everything straight and, keeping the spine properly too. Because I'm sure that once it's spined right, it stays that way, I suppose, for the life of the shaft anyway.
Mike is one of the only ones that does this, the spine in the shaft. He has a patented tool that can, I believe, bore 3 feet, a hole 3 feet, that's less than 100 thousandths in diameter. I believe it's around 80 thousandths of an inch in diameter. Goes spine right down the middle. And you don't put that in until near the end, when it's been shaved and trued several times. So, as we've discussed, if anyone was listening, you can see how many processes have to go on just to finish a shaft in the butt section of a cue. You order a cue, you order it you pick your wood out, you pick your inlays, you pick whatever. A custom cube built for you. It's going to be about $1,500. $1,100 from this guy. And that's before he starts doing inlays and all that artwork some people want, which I don't do. So, you can see all the processes, my God. And some people go, but it's just a cure stick. Over.
No matter what the hobby is, or if it's got anything with anything, just this, you know, handcraftsmanship, or, you know, it takes that much time, you're going to pay for it. It's expensive. Same thing with me. You know, I did a little collecting of custom knives, and, you know, they can get real expensive in a hurry as well. And this, some of these guys have 10-year waiting lists, 5 years, and some of them don't even take orders anymore, and you can only buy them in the aftermarket, and then you'll pay, you know, you'll pay a lot more money. You'll pay double what it would be if you got it directly from them. It's the same deal. You know, people say, well, why would you pay this, you know, that much money for a knife or whatever? And, well, you know, it's you know, when a $25 knife cut us, well, it's not the same thing, is it? Some pride of ownership. Plus, all these things hold the value better than gold. I mean, they, you know, some of them, I've seen some of these guys, let me let this thing drop for a second. You're on a list of one of your, you know, keys to this guy. He's had a 3 or 4 year waiting list. But you buy one direct, and the aftermarket rate, you know, instead of $1,100, you know, like a knife, you know, I might pay $800 or $900 or $1,200 for a knife, and then the aftermarket thing may be over $2,000. But do you want to wait 5 years or not?
Yeah, same with handcrafted. You got to go on their schedule, and if you can't wait, you're gonna have to pay. Yeah, same old game. Thousands of years ago, same thing. Yeah. Of course, they didn't have mass manufacture back then, but the concepts are mostly the same. Just limited by technology. The human concepts are the same. Hey, I gotta jump out. I'm gonna consider siding up a tree for an antenna, so I think I'm gonna go out in the backyard, Jerry. Over.
See, John, up to marksmanship is good in the backyard. I gotta run too. I gotta run down and drop something off the post office before they close at 11. Good talk to you as usual this morning, and hope you have a good day, and maybe catch you on a little later in the day. M4DJC, I'll be clear with you, John.
Okay, very good, dear Jerry. Yeah, this is K2YN with N4DJC saying have a good day there. Yeah, we'll catch you later, Jerry. This is K2YN. Bye-bye.
K04HKX. K04HKX. K04NUE.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. I wouldn't either. How are you, Dave? You doing all right today?
I'm headed to the softball game. Little League baseball. It's my grandson.
That's what you was talking about when you said that. But what's going on with you? You having a good morning?
KO4HK.
KO4HK. Dave, stand by just a minute. Just a second, if you don't mind, sir. K04HKX, I am 4.4 miles from your QTH. Just wanted to let you know and ask if you drink coffee, because I need a cup really bad. If you don't, I'm going to have to stop and buy one.
He's got some K-cups here, but other than that, that's it.
And I'll see if I can find me a cup somewhere. Okay, go ahead, Dave.
If y'all need to discuss something before you get there.
Patrick, I got some cable in the back of the truck. And I'll be there just in a few minutes. Let you take a look at it.
possibly try to get a little more height out of it, but we're just going to talk about that first and see kind of what you got in mind.
Where if you drive on past the house and go to the end of the road, there's a convenience store about 3 miles past the house if you want to run up there and grab your coffee.
And the cup here is cold, but I can get that down my gullet. I'll be there shortly. Just want to let you know.
And good morning, Dave. I'm sorry.
With Uniform 2 Tango Mobile.
Anybody on this repeater? Oh, hey, Rusty. How you doing, man?
I can't replace you with a good-looking woman. Sorry about that, Dave. That was supposed to stay in my head. Anyway, good morning to you. Good morning to Patrick. And I don't know who the other fellow was in there that's meeting up with Patrick, but good morning to him, too. I'm just getting on the road. Got to go down to Easley. Got to go down and help somebody, a friend of mine that's needing some help getting some furniture taken apart because she's getting ready to move. And she's like 80-something, late 80s or early 90s. I can't remember which now, but I've promised to go help her, so I'm on my way to do that this morning. And I'll go ahead, Patrick.
Good to hear you. And, Chad, I'm out here ready whenever you show up, buddy.
4 NUE, clear.
I'm getting ready to just cross over White Horse. I'm getting ready to get on 124. I'm headed to Easley myself.
Get on 85 like I need to, coming my way. Because if I go anywhere else, go any of the other ways, I know how to get down there. I end up on back roads, and it's taking me an hour and a half instead of about 55 minutes to get there from my house. And I got to make a quick stop up here and pick me up a soda before I go on down, get on down the road. And so, what are you up to? What are you going down to Easley for?
Grandson's got a little league baseball game. I can't remember the name of the field. It's anyway. It's in Easley.
I'm headed down that way myself. Like I said, I've got to go help take some furniture apart. It's kind of strange. It's one of these beds that does all the raising of the feet and the legs and the head and all that stuff. And it's one of those automated beds. And I'm the one that helped take it apart when she moved down there and put it back together. Went down there and put it back together. And she get ready to move to another facility, I think over in Seneca, even further away. And she's giving the bed to the Salvation Army to take, but her son wants the headboard, and he has no clue how to take it apart because he couldn't figure it out when we first moved her. So I'm heading down to do that, and everything's supposed to be back. Supposed to be calling Annette starting at 1 o'clock, but I don't think I'm going to be back in time to do that.
And don't hurt yourself, and let me take this phone call with my wife. 73 is KB4CBA.
W2 T-Mobile. DOS, KI4DOS, W2T. Gary, you around? U2 T-Mobile.
KB4CBA Mobile.
Can your wife give you to pick up on your way back home later?
Trying to tell me how to get to this ballpark, don't go by the Waze app and turn here and turn there, and I'm just like, good grief, oh me, but I know where this park is, and she says that, Waze app takes you a new way, and it's better, so. But then she was calling about some details about, where I turn once I get in the park. And, anyway, that's as far as I'm going to go with that conversation.
Yep, and that's what you got to do sometimes. And I'll. But anyway, yeah, I'm gonna quick stop up here real quick and grab me a soda and then get back on the road. And I'm gonna be a little bit late because I was supposed to be there by 10:30. There ain't no way I'm gonna get there by 10:30. So I had a late start, just slow getting moving this morning. So, oh, it is what it is, as they say.
I don't think they'll be complaining, you know, since you're offering your help. So, that's the way I look at it. So you drink cold caffeine in the morning?
I get decaffeinated, and I get the stuff without the caffeine in it, and that's what I get. So, stop up here and get me a soda at the QT before I get on the interstate. And that way I'll have something chill to drink while as I go down the road. And the Cracker Barrel over here on 290 has got a lot of folks here at it this morning. And their parking lot is about two-thirds full.
Hey, that Cracker Barrel, they're pretty consistent. No matter where you go, you can pretty much expect the same thing. That's the one thing people really like about them. If they like Cracker Barrel to begin with, and that's one thing I like about some of the old restaurants I go to in Greenville. You know, the food's always the same, and no surprises, and in that it's nothing fancy, but it's like a meat and three, but like I said, no surprises. The food's always good, and that's the way I like it.
Hey, man, I got a phone call I gotta take.
I'll go right ahead, KP4CBA.